On Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presents its 6th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan. Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronsgeist, and Sarah Benora. Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander. San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry. MVT Productions. Wilson Investment Properties. Rhoda Construction. And White House Catering. For event information and tickets, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 195,000 members dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of housing market and brokerage industry trends, member communications, and membership development activities. And she's very involved in speaking to the membership. Leslie, welcome back to our show.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Nice to be here.
I'm just curious, what's the mood of the membership like these days?
You know, it's very, very positive. There is a lot going on. In fact, I would argue right now the market is more balanced than it's been in 5 or 6 years. You know, we've had a bit of a kind of a change in the tone over the last couple of months, primarily driven by the increase in rates. So rates are up about a percentage point, full percentage point since the end of May. And I would actually argue that that's been a very positive thing for the market. You know, you've still got a supply constraint that's really driving the California market. In fact, year to date, we're down about 3.2% compared to last year. And it's not, as you know, a demand side issue. It really is a supply side issue. So there's deals being made. I think the investor interest is still strong, but waning a tiny bit. And so you've got a little bit more of a window for hopefully first time buyers to get involved in the market. So lots going on.
Now, why do we have a supply side issue? Is it because we have still a fair amount of people upside down who can't participate?
You know, we do, but I think we're at a tipping point. The constrained supply, and typically we see inventory on a kind of looking at the last 25 years. When I'm asked what's a normal market in terms of supply, I say between a 6 to 7 month supply. And we've been, we're still below 3. There is a kind of a range. So the higher up you get in terms of price category, the more supply there is. But even in the $1 million or more category, we have less than a 5 month supply of homes on the market. But it was a couple of things, right? Demand's really strong, but on the supply side, the underwater mortgage holders were not able to participate. Now that number has dropped significantly, and it's accelerating as price appreciation has taken off. So, you know, end of 2009, about 35% of the mortgages in California were underwater, and the most recent data from CoreLogic that just came out a week or so ago, I think it was something around 15%. So some of those properties are definitely shaking loose. There are some, you know, loan mods happening and so on, but that's certainly helping. And, you know, I think the other big thing is that the investors were such a big part of the market that at least until recently, it made more economic sense to rent rather than flip. And at the level of prices and with rates going up, we're starting to see more turnover and less kind of a long-term strategy, but that really kept properties off kind of the members, you know, for sale for owners off the market as well. So I think those are kind of the major major issues.
I'm looking at the chart where you just mentioned the average since 1988 in inventory is something around 7 months or so,
right,
or less. But what I and it's one of the reasons why I don't like averages in a way, because in the stretch between, say, 2000, very early in 2000, maybe March of 2000, when we got below 4 months, there was only 1 month in the next 5 or 6 years that we went over 4 months. And so my question is, once you get below a certain amount of inventory, how do you get back up to a normal number unless you price yourself out completely?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I'm afraid I don't have a great answer. I mean, and again, I think this is the most, you know, I'm really focused on what did we miss last time, and 5 years from now, what are we going to be thinking when we look back at this period? And the one thing that I zero in on, and I think you're the perfect person to ask, is how will investors behave differently than, say, a homeowner in this cycle as we move through? And can we count on investors when other investment opportunities arise in other sectors to get these properties on the market and help us with more inventory? I think the other big concern, and you know, we've had a big drop in household formations. You've got a lot of, you know, young people, even with college degrees, that can't get jobs, that are living with their parents. That, you know, the big thing about the millennials are putting off major life decisions like, you know, getting married and having children and buying a home. But at some point, they will be employed and they will be independent from their parents and they will be wanting houses. And it's hard in a lot of areas in California to break ground and build, right?
Right.
So you've got a lot of infill going on in the heavily populated coastal areas. So I think that's going to be a real challenge going forward. I think we're going to be talking about housing affordability. We just are cranking our numbers for our annual housing market survey, and the percent of first-time home buyers is really low. It's somewhere like 25-27%. Whereas the long-term average is more like 38-48%. So that's, again, another part of the dynamic of this cycle that I find fascinating and concerning.
Well, I wonder if the first-time buyer, if they're having a lot of difficulty competing with all cash offers. I think that's part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the FHA program is no longer competitive, so that, you know, is really the only low down payment option going. So those things have both hurt.
When you say it's no longer competitive, what do you mean?
It's just more expensive. I mean, the fees and the premiums are up, and the fees are up, and so and the traditional market is very competitive. I mean, the other thing we saw happen, what, in the last month, was that jumbos were actually more affordable than slightly
right.
than conforming. So there's a lot of crazy things happening in that market.
Well, you brought up an interesting point, and I love charts, because then the longer the history, then you can say, okay, well, then I can sort of predict if people will do what they normally do. Your answer, or the question you asked was, what do investors do,
right,
let's say, as prices increase?
Right.
They buy more. You have a chart that shows that. You have a chart that shows as prices go up or inventory, as affordability goes down, both the occupant owner and the investor increase their volume.
Well, but how do rates figure into that for investors? And maybe the answer is not that much this time because it's all cash.
Well, I think what they do, and again, we're using a term investor where they might in fact get replaced by a speculator. So that's a different hat, and maybe a whole different group that are more they're unsophisticated, and they're doing it perhaps for the first time. If there's financing available, and that'll probably be the key, then they won't care about cash flow. They'll care about that it went up 20%.
Right, right. Well, I think that, you know, as you look ahead, I think that the price appreciation, at least in this early part of this cycle, has been realized. So I think for an investor, the outlook for aggressive price appreciation ought to be dimmed just a little bit, and I guess depending on the area. And the rate environment, I mean, we found out today that the Fed is not going to taper, as at least right now, as many people thought it would. So we're going to see an easy money environment for the foreseeable future. But don't higher rates mean that investor money looks at other alternatives?
Well, again, in the past, I'd have to say no.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the oddest thing, and that's why when you look at a chart and say, okay, what is this telling me? It tells me that when real estate moves in price, and I know that everybody's pretty suspicious that we're not going to have aggressive price increases now because we've had a very aggressive year. We had a record-setting year.
Right.
But if you look at the underlying reasons why, see, I think we have 6 months of demand in the marketplace, landing on less than half of that in inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's going to change. I don't see a history of inventory exploding until volumes of sales decrease.
Right.
And so I don't see volumes of sales decreasing. As a matter of fact, wouldn't it be about time for lenders to cut loose with some of the restrictions and overlays? I'm really interested to know that from our panel is, you know, they just came up with a program, FHA now will loan to people that have a bankruptcy, foreclosure, or short sale just 12 months in arrears. In other words, 12 months ago, and now you can get an FHA loan, but how many lenders will actually do the loan?
You know, and I think that's a good question, but there's no doubt that there's a little bit of a thaw in the chill in the market in terms of getting a new mortgage. And I was actually just on a panel today in downtown Los Angeles, kind of hearing from people that are active in that market, and they actually were a little bit more strident on it than I have been, kind of looking at the more aggregate data. So the fact that things are starting to loosen up a little bit, I think, is very, very positive as well.
And it's typical, though. I mean, this is what happens.
Yes, right, exactly, Bruce. This is what happens.
Okay.
No surprise.
And what happens is when they take, let's say, a lender steps up and takes a risk, and they don't have significant delinquencies or losses, their competitors now have to compete with that loan product.
Right.
And I would think, you know, we'll be off to the races, at least in a more lax direction, never reaching the ridiculous things we did in, you know, 04, 05, 06. But nonetheless, it will help the market.
No, I think it will, and I think it's about time. There's no doubt in my mind that we overcorrected a little bit.
Now, we have a couple things that have come up. Reduced loan limits for Fannie and Freddie.
Right.
Any concern there?
A huge concern.
Okay.
A huge concern. Obviously, for California, and certainly for the industry that I represent, the loan limit issue is very, very near and dear to our hearts. And we're actually at my research group is going through some data calculations so that we're able to go to Capitol Hill and say, okay, if loan limits are reduced by X amount, this is going to be the impact on the market. And I'll tell you one thing that I see coming down the pike very clearly, Bruce, and that is the issue of housing affordability and the inability of the kind of, you know, normal first-time home buyer with the income, you know, even a reasonable income, to find property that they can afford in California. So having loan and working in relatively high-priced areas, so having reasonable loan limits that we have now, I think, is very, very important. And I don't know why they would want to do that in an economy where the housing sector is the brightest light.
Well, and it's going to get brighter if it's kind of left alone. I think it could help solve a lot of things on the employment and the migration side, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They need to really revisit it. There was the knee-jerk reaction of 5 years ago needs to be replaced, especially even looking at Fannie and Freddie, with a much colder, rational eye to how do we do this transition and what's in the best interest of consumers and the, you know, free flow of capital. What should this look like?
Yeah, it's interesting that the fix happens to be coinciding with the most profitable quarters ever.
Well, exactly, and that's what I wonder, if anybody's willing to walk away from all that money flowing into the Treasury right now.
Right. In other words, maybe we've done more than enough already, and maybe we should let it ride until real estate can help. Real estate is still not a big percentage of the GDP as it normally is, or anywhere close.
No, but it certainly is the most, one of the most active, positive parts of the economy, right now. And the appreciation that we've seen over the last 2 years, and it particularly took off in the spring of 2012, has helped immeasurably. I mean, a huge drop in negative equity, mm-hmm. and helped these homeowners who were really stuck, and the fact that they can get unstuck and become not only part of the economy, but also get their homes back on the market, I think is very positive.
Now, just to clarify, the reduction in loan amount or the loan limit is only about, what, $30,000? But it's the direction that they want
to go. It's the direction, and obviously any, incremental amounts always, always add up when you're looking at individuals. But I don't think they're, it's 100% clear to me exactly what the final number is going to be.
Okay. Short sale taxable debt forgiveness, that's still in California's...
It's still up for grabs.
Yeah.
We're working that bill very, very hard in Sacramento. It certainly makes all the sense in the world, and it unfortunately became tied to an unrelated bill. So we're hoping that we'll be able to do something that will be effective, and it may not be till 2014, but as long as we get it approved before tax, before the tax bills are due in April, my understanding is that it will be, it will help the people filing for 2013. But that's been a huge push by the California Association of Realtors, just to conform to the federal law. That's all we're trying to do here.
And it didn't seem like there's not resistance to that, except for they tied another bill to it that wasn't agreeable.
Right. It was a political move, but looking at that independently of anything else, no one's afraid of it, and the cost is minimal, and it just makes all the sense in the world.
The recent discussion about qualified residential mortgage, and there seemed to be two, and I'm a little unclear on this. There was a zero down option. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I'm not an expert on that right now, but yeah, I think there was a zero down option.
Okay. And then there was a 30% option. I thought, well, those are light years apart.
Well, they are light years apart. And I think, obviously, the jury's still out. We're going to have to see exactly what that legislation looks like
When is the jury done?
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be, it's got to be soon. Because
that's what
I
thought.
Because it takes effect in January.
Exactly.
Right, January 1st, 2014. So, yeah, we actually have our expo in Long Beach for the California Association of Realtors. It's the second week in October, and we have actually several sessions where we're bringing kind of experts in, including some people from our own legal department who have actually read every single word of the Dodd-Frank legislation and are deeply involved, and hopefully we'll get some clearer answers at that point. But I personally am not exactly sure how that's all going to play out, and I think the uncertainty is one of the things that's been a drag on the market.
Absolutely. I think if you take a look at the builders' participation rate as far as the amount of homes that they've built in the past and the subdivisions that they're creating, they're way behind on that. And I think that uncertainty has something to do with their decision to take a risk or not.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it often at a certain level doesn't matter exactly what the rules are. Just tell us what they are so we can make an informed decision. And sometimes government isn't very good at doing that, unfortunately.
No. Shadow inventory used to be on the front burner. How do you feel about that now?
I don't see much shadow inventory at all. And I know, we are both friends with and the recipients of the knowledge of Sean O'Toole at Property Radar, and having had many discussions with him on this issue, I think I can say with certainty and with good backup that the shadow inventory in California is probably now like a 2-year supply, something like that, when you just look at what's in the pipeline and coming out. And the very large numbers that you used to hear thrown about, 10-year supply of shadow inventory really had to do with assuming that everyone that was underwater, and it was about 2.1 million mortgages, that all of those mortgages would end up, all of those homes would end up as a as REO, you know, would go through that process. And
right.
Now when we look backwards, we know that that isn't the case. And certainly the huge acceleration in prices and the big reduction in the CoreLogic data, I think, bears that out.
Does the eminent domain issue, you know, its progression in Richmond, has that surprised you?
A little bit, but it doesn't seem to be resolving. You know, I don't think they're able to do it. What really surprises me about that whole issue is, why would you take that? I mean, I understand it on a certain level, but just in terms of the capital markets, why would you put any mortgage that was originated in that particular jurisdiction at risk? You know, why would you scare off all the investors through eminent domain? That just didn't make sense to us at all. So we've been, you know, very vocal on that issue as well.
Yeah, the judge ruled yesterday that there was no merit in the basically on the lawsuit, and so they're going to be able to continue.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about that is the unintended consequences, and I think that's what you were alluding to, is that
absolutely.
You know, okay, I'm a lender and somebody's forcing my hand. I used to be able to go get the asset. Now I can't do that. Now I have to take a hit on the loan and I have to do it. That's scary.
Right, and I'm going to make more loans in that area.
Exactly.
So go back to some type of redlining because of that. So I think sometimes there are knee-jerk reactions, and I do understand the motivation, but I do think it's important to look at, as you said, unintended consequences, which would be dire, you know, to the market.
Yeah, you really would like them to feel comfortable making loans in the future, not saying, well, we got to get out of this market completely.
Well, exactly. And so the value of the homes when the sellers go to put them on the market in the future would be severely impacted.
Well, it would encourage other areas to try and do the same thing. And it's a little late in the game. I mean, I thought if this was going to come about, it was going to come about in 2008 and 2009, not in 2013.
A couple of years ago. Right, not now. We're too far in the up cycle for it to make a lot of sense, but we'll see.
Yeah. In the last minute, as an economist, how do you see California as far as receptive to business and maybe progressing toward a balanced budget?
You know, I've been very impressed with Governor Brown. You know, I kind of missed. I wasn't living in California in the most of the 70s when he was governor the first time around, but certainly heard all the names and so on and so forth. And our leadership has met with him a number of times over the last, you know, since he's been governor, and have come away really impressed with his ability to get things done, the fact that he really is more pro-business than you would think, and has certainly been very, very receptive to many of the issues in terms of affordable housing and capital markets and so on that I think are important to realtors and to the real estate industry. And, you know, the economy has come back, you know, and the budget issues are, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still some fundamental major issues related to pensions and so on that need to be addressed. But I am optimistic that they'll continue to make inroads as they have over the last year or two.
Well, with that, Leslie, we've got to end our session. We're looking forward to you being on our panel in October, and thanks so much for joining us.
I am too. Thanks so much, Bruce. Always good to talk to you.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Claudia Buys Houses, Elite Auctions, Phoebe, For Investors, Buy Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sunoco Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez,
Westin South Coast Plaza. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for more on the event and all of our sponsors.